Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for the week of October 7th. I'm John Gibson, and with me on a Sunday evening is Jim Allen. How you doing, buddy?
Well, I'm in a state of disbelief that it's October 7th already, but other than that, I'm good. But you have to understand, podcast listeners, this is, you know, I think if you go back through the podcast, you'll find that about every other podcast, it says, October already, April 24th, you've got to be kidding. Baseball season just sort of creeps up on you, and then sticks around for 6 months, smacking you in the butt tell you that.
Yeah, we're taking turns making that statement. Yeah, one week it's you. Wow, it's already October, and then the next week.
The funny thing is that October 7th. Normally, we're going, when is the regular season gonna end?
Yeah, the rain out, the makeups, the trickling of the season, trying to finish those games, but. Yeah, it's all done, and we're into the climax phase, and I just want you to move out of that whatever state you're in and come into a happy state.
Wow, okay. There are narcotics involved, but knowing you, there won't be, so that's no fun.
Yikes.
That's kind of a semi-happy state.
Wow. All right, well, let's happily get into this week's show, where we've got an interview with Zach Neale of Seibu. We're going to look at the PLCS and the CLCS first rounds, and which are ongoing, unfortunately. We didn't have either one of them end today. We've got some skipper news, and we're going to handle some high heat, so let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
All right, so right now I have to apologize profusely, and I'll do so later again, but during one of my visits to MetLife, Seibu Dome, Prince Stadium, or whatever you want to call it, I spoke to Zach Neale, and I mentioned, hey, I'd like to chat with you at some point between the first round and the second rounds of the PLCS, and so he said, well, why don't you give me a call? So he gave me his phone number, and we did speak, and this happened on Thursday night, and I just have to apologize. I botched this whole thing. I left my Bluetooth on my iPhone. I usually tape with two items. I have one main one and a backup, and for some reason my IC recorder wasn't working that night, so I used the computer. And so it sounds like Zach and I traveled back to the 70s. There were some hippies in the background, and we were chatting here, so I apologize for the really poor sound quality, but you can do this. You can imagine that it's something with the mod squad, and I have long sideburns, and Zach is, you know, looking cool with some sunglasses on, and we're chatting.
I think, John, to visualize this, I think people need to see those pics of your afro.
Well, I don't have sideburns, but I do have pics of an afro. Maybe I'll throw one of those up on Twitter.
Right, because of that famous disco brush that Cameron.
Yeah, I do have some pics of me with an afro, so maybe I'll throw that up on Twitter. Anyway, so I apologize. This is a really good chat with Zach. Just imagine him being the Marlboro man on the poster on the wall as we talk here. So go ahead and take a listen if you can.
Joining us by phone this evening is Zach Neale of the Seibu Lions. Thank you so much for taking time to chat with us. Really appreciate that.
Yeah, it's no problem at all. I'm happy to come on, happy to share my experiences.
All right, well, what a heck of a first year you're having with the Lions. How has this 11-game winning streak of yours, winning all these decisions consecutively, been for you?
It's still kind of a surreal feeling, you know?
No, actually, I don't know.
I didn't know either. So I've actually been on a streak like that, similar, but it was only a senior in college, so it was a little bit different mistake. But, you know, I think the coolest part about it was I didn't really have time to kind of sit back and think about it, or I didn't really think about it. You know, each week was just a new game. You know, but now with the break between the playoffs, I kind of had a chance to sit back, kind of think about the last 3 months, you know, and it's been a rough ride.
Yeah, I can imagine. I can only imagine. Now, which came first, the chicken or the egg? And by what I mean by that is, did the run support really help you and make you feel comfortable in getting wins, or Did you feel like if you just pitched well, that eventually this team would come around and score some runs and you'd be able to get some wins?
You know, I think it's a mixture of both. You know, I know, you know, seeing these guys play every day, how dangerous we can be offensively. So, you know, for me, I try not to think about, you know, stuff out of my control when I'm, you know, going into a game or going into a start, you know, but I know that if I go out there and give this team a chance to win, then, you know, more times than not, you know, they're going to score runs and I'm going to keep us in the game. And that's really all that I can do. Some games I would get a lot, some games I would get a little, and, you know, we just made it work. You know, but to have such a good team and, you know, to trust them and trust, you know, that they were going to show up and them trusting me, you know, it was just a good team thing, you know, and I think that's what's most important is the team. For me, like you said, the run support is huge. So, you know, I can give up a run or two and know that everything's going to be okay. And that's comforting, too, when you're pitching. You know that you don't have to be perfect. So I think it was just a mixture of both, which is part of being a good team.
Okay, well, I did notice that I saw a note on Twitter. There's a guy I follow, the big stat nerd, and he said your run support average of 7.07 led NPB, and then you had two teammates, Kona Takahashi and also Tatsuya Imai, also in the top seven with you. So I think it's part of that, but what's your take on that, just the fact that you guys could pitch with such comfort?
You know, like I said, that's just an added beauty of being on a good team. Going into the game knowing that you have a chance to win because your guys are going to score runs is a good feeling. You know, like I said before, it takes a little bit of the pressure off. I know that I don't have to be so fine. You know, I can give up a solo home run. I can give up a two-run home run early. But I know I just need to keep us in the game, you know. As a pitcher, as a starting pitcher especially, you know, Michael, every time out is a quality start. You know, for six innings, you know, three runs or less, seven innings, three runs or less, just to keep us in the game, and I've done my job.
Right.
You know, so I just try to take that mindset of, you know, keep us right there, keep us in the game, keep it close, and, you know, let those other guys do their job. So.
Right, right. So I noticed that, you know, you said give up a two-run home run early or something, but I did notice that you seem to have a tendency to allow runs early in games, and then the middle innings you have – you're laughing. The middle innings you have a lot of zeros. Now, how are you working to address that situation?
You know, there were some situations, some games where I felt, you know, some guys would get – they'll kind of hit with me early on, or, you know, hit a good pitch out, or, you know, maybe they come out, you know, a little more ready, or I'm not really sure what you could say about that or what comes to that, but as I keep going in the game, I usually catch a little bit of a groove, I guess you could say. Timing starts to click a little bit better, my fingers start a little more. I just kind of settle into the game, and, you know, everything starts to flow a little bit, really. Maybe first inning, I'm maybe a little excited and my fingers a little elevated, or, you know, I'm not as sharp as the hitters are early on. You know, but I think for the most part, I think that, I don't know if you can attribute to anything or just kind of a fluke or disappointment that they're giving up some runs early and then settling in. And, you know, I'm kind of getting a feel for the team's facing, you know, see what they're trying to do, see kind of what their strategy is, or
right.
There's a lot that goes into it.
Right.
I mean, I think you could attribute that to a lot of different things.
Yeah, a lot of times I hear an announcer say, well, the guy only made one mistake tonight, and I would think, well, no, they made some other mistakes, it's just that one got hit, you know, and so...
Oh, yeah, we make mistakes all the time, just sometimes they hit them, sometimes they don't. You know, especially for me being a, you know, not an overpowering guy, you know, really attacking the strike zone, I try to minimize the mistakes, you know, but sometimes you make those, you know, we're not computers. You just hope that, you know, when you do, you know, you've messed with their timing enough to where they miss it or they miss a barrel.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, how are you guys, and you in particular, because I know we, I think we saw in the, I saw it somewhere on the internet today that you're going to be the game one starter for the second round of the playoffs. So how are you staying sharp during this week plus of no game?
Yeah, you know, so the first week, it was nice. It was a nice breather. I needed, you know, that was a lot of fun. And I feel like every game that I did was a must-win. It was stressful. You know, we fought, you know, until the very, almost the very last game, you know, I wanted to clinch.
Yep.
So I took 3 days off. I gave my body a bad, took my mind off the game a little bit, and that was nice. And then now, I threw 3 innings yesterday. And I simulated games, and then I threw 2 more innings simulated in the bullpen. So I threw almost like a 65-80 pitch outing yesterday.
Okay.
Took my off day today, and now I can go about my week as if it was a normal week with a start yesterday. And then I'll just, you know, I'll do what I've been doing for the last. It's funny, but every day, you know, every day I go to the field, you know, I have my agenda. Day is delegated. I have my routine.
Mm-hmm.
So now I'll have a chance to get back on that routine with the weird scheduling the past week. So that'll be comforting to me, you know, physically and mentally, just being on that same page again.
Now, are you going to watch the first round of the playoffs in a couple days when they start?
Yeah, I'll watch every pitch from it.
All right. Yeah, I know that you know it should be a really fun series. I these series are so weird, you know, these 3-game series. It's so much with each out that starts to stack up. There's so much pressure in these games. But how do you feel about the second round? This is going to be your first experience. You got the second round where you guys get all the games at home and you start with the 1-win advantage.
Yeah, you know, I didn't believe it when I told you that that's how it works.
I didn't believe it when they said they were going to do it.
Yeah, you know, I said, wow, we can change it. You know, I didn't get the playoffs. You said you were telling me that, you know, the series, like, yeah, well, we had that last year. We got beat in the playoffs. You know, this doesn't always work, but, you know, we had that this year. It's great. It's a huge advantage. You know, I think the players are our own fans. You know, not everyone likes them at all.
To Jim, you spoke about lessons that you learned in the minors, and you said you were still learning. Now, suppose a similar pitcher joins the Lions next year. What tips would you give him to make the same process smoother for this new pitcher?
I think it just depends on the pitcher, to be honest. But I think I would tell, you know, most people, the hitters, is you can't really walk guys in this league.
Mm.
You can't give free baseball. Everyone's fast. Everyone's aggressive. You know, so you have to attack the zone, but you have to do it in such a way where you can force weak contact.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you can't just throw fastballs. It doesn't matter how hard you're using. You know, I mean, I feel like the hitters here have such good hands. They're so good with the barrel.
Mm-hmm.
They don't really miss, and they'll, you know, they might not hit a home run, but they'll hit a single, and then the next guy will walk, and the next guy hits a single, and then the guy that hits the home run, so he'll hit a home run.
Right.
Depending on the style of pitcher, I think it's different for every pitcher, but for the most part, the first basic thing is you have to throw strikes, you have to be aggressive, and you have to be good in the zone.
Yep. All right, one more. I when I was watching your team come back from whatever it was, 8.5 games back, I was really happy because I think at some point I said, well, because in Japan, a lot of the times the media just, they vote for the top home run hitter on the first place team, or they look for someone who contributed a lot on the first place team, whether it be a pitcher or whatever. But I was so happy that you guys came back because I really thought Takuya Nakamura had an MVP worthy season. And of course you had Otaka Yamakawa hitting well, and you had Tomoya Mori also doing well. So among those three guys, how do you feel? I mean, I could see all three of them finishing 1, 2, 3 in the MVP voting, but how do you guys feel about that trio of hitters on your team?
I mean, that's a special group. You know, there's no way that I could tell you which one deserves an MVP. You can make a case for each player. Whether it comes down to RBIs, you know, batting average, RBIs, hits, home runs. I mean, there's so many different things you can factor in that decision. There's no way I could ever choose. But, you know, I say this a lot. You know, I'm lucky to have them on my team just because of how special they are. You know, it's a special group of hitters, and it's fun to watch. You know, without one of those three, there's no way that we would be where we are. Now, if you can put in, you know, decide which one's the most important, that's a tough job. That's not for me to decide.
Oh yeah, definitely. I don't even want to pick. I don't want to pick, and I'm supposed to, but I'm going to figure out which one of them I like best, but. Like I said, I want to throw your name in there as well. When you come over in your first year and you only lose one game in the regular season and you get the ball for game one in the playoffs, that says a lot. And you told us about your the adjustments that you've made and making adapting your pitching to this country, because it's they don't call it baseball, they use the Japanese word for it, and it's true because it's different. It is different than we do in the States.
Yeah, there's so many things that go into that. Not just, you know, me adjusting my style or me adjusting a few pitches here and there, but, you know, it's a lifestyle change. And it's the baseball that you're used to in the States, the baseball that I play is different. It's not the same. And I think the quicker that you realize that, the quicker, you know, you keep an open mind on what you want to do here, you know, and how hitters are going to go about doing that, the more successful you'll be. For me, I wanted to really open up my mind and really, you know, learn from people that have done it before me. You know, that's the only way that I can learn and be the best, you know. So there's a lot of things that, you know, that go into having success here besides just playing. So I think for someone who's new or for someone who doesn't really understand what's going on here, you know, I'm a good example of now that I've done it, I could share those experiences and, you know, let them know what it's going to take.
All right. Well, thanks a lot. Good luck in the playoffs, and we'll see you out there at Tokorozawa. Take care of yourself. Stay healthy, and have a good one. We appreciate it.
Yeah, no worries. Thanks for having me on. Enjoy talking with you.
All right. Again, sincere apologies for the poor sound quality, but I promise to get it right next time. I'm going out to a park on Wednesday this week, so I haven't decided whether I'll be going to Tokyo Dome or Seibu Prince, whatever you want to call it, MetLife, but I'll figure it out and get out there, and I'll make sure my IC recording is working. But anyway, if there was anything that you could pick out of that, Jim, what was it for you that stood out?
Well, two things. One is that first of all, as much as Zach likes talking with us, we like talking with him, because you ask him a question and you not only, he's got a little bit of Shohei Ohtani in him, and I don't mean in the sense that he's not very linguistically able, but that he really wants to communicate.
Mm.
And with Ohtani, when you ask him a question, he'll give you an answer. And then he'll give you another version of the answer. And then he'll give you a third version of the answer. You know, just sort of make sure that you get what you're trying to say. And
right.
With Zach, you definitely get the feeling he wants to communicate, which is a huge boon. And people who don't really speak the language well, or maybe don't even have great vocabularies, if they want to talk to you and they want you to understand, that makes the biggest difference in the world. So for that, we thank you. And the question about what lessons you would pass on to the next pitcher. Well, first of all, it depends on the pitcher. But then, you'll need to learn these things about Japanese baseball. And I love the lessons essentially. And I will boil them down further than he did, which was be able to throw strikes. Now, last time we spoke, he said he was sort of dabbling in the idea of getting guys to chase, which was for him a kind of a novel concept. And I still think he's not really comfortable with that, as evidenced by this. And I looked at Delta Graphs, the analysis website for Japanese baseball, and it, you know, gives you a little snapshot of his pitches. Basically, his two big pitches are his two-seamer and his changeup. And but you look at his pitches and you look at his sort of profile comparing him to other pitchers, and he's so ordinary. Well, I guess he's extraordinary in the sense that his pitches are a little low on the low speed side, mm-hmm. so they're not going to burn you with that. He throws a high percentage of balls in the zone. Opposing batters make a high amount of contact on his pitches, and they don't necessarily get a lot of soft contact. He gets very little soft contact. So it's almost like a mystery how this guy gets it done. But I think that's, so I can understand why somebody asking, well, what's your secret to success, would be like, gee, you got 10 hours? Because it seems pretty, I mean, in a sense, how he gets it done with these, well, you know, he's got a couple of pitches, but I'm suspecting that the pitch identification is since it's mostly changeup and two-seamer, that's probably it. I mean, it says, oh, he throws a cutter, but those could be two-seamers that he didn't execute properly or something, sliders.
He mentioned his sinker, yeah.
Yep, so I think he keeps it really simple, pitch to contact, and we've talked about the Lions' defense, or I should say manager Hatsuki Tsuji has talked about the Lions' defense, basically saying it's lousy. Mm-hmm. But it is not that bad. As I've said, it's not that bad that given the amount of hard contact that pitchers give up, I think it's credible. And so he's done well with that. I don't know there's anything magic to it that he does, except I think, number one, don't walk guys.
Right.
I mean, yeah. He went through a stretch in September where I think he didn't walk. I don't think he walked a batter in September.
Wow, I didn't know that, yeah.
This is something that Bobby Valentine's Marines were religious. Now, he didn't talk about it, but when I asked him, he'd give me that look like, oh, you see this. You know, he'd give me the, he'd raise one eyebrow.
And he says, the look, yeah.
Yeah, which is, you found my Easter egg. Because they were, I mean, for about 3 years, from about 2005 to 2007, the Marines probably walked 100 fewer batters than any other team in the Pacific League. It was just amazing how few guys that they gave, how many fewer base runners they gave away because of that. And that's a big thing. I mean, that can be a big thing.
Right.
Be a big thing, and with Neil, I guess it's working out. I mean, there are other things we could look at, but anyway, it's quite amazing. And his point, basically, learn how to get it done in the zone.
No walks in September. You are correct.
Which I thought was interesting. I think that's a sort of a formula for pitchers anyway, because if you can get outs in the zone, then pretty much problem solved.
Yeah, I like, he's a professional. You know, they always talk about the guy who's the professional hitter. You know, you can, basically, when I hear that phrase, I think of a guy who can cover all the zones of the strike zone and get hits with him. Well, he can get strikes in lots of areas in the strike zone, and he can also get guys. You know, it's something that I noticed with Shun Yamaguchi. Shun Yamaguchi of the Giants seems like he can get guys to swing at pitches that are going to end up out of the strike zone more than anybody else. Mm-hmm. And it seems like with Zach, he knows exactly when to go out of the strike zone, or he's got guys so crossed up, just like what he said, you're getting soft contact, or maybe you've kept them off balance enough so that they don't hit it, as hard as they plan to. But he's got some late movement. He's got this keen sense of when to throw, what speed, what location. And I think, you know, you said he gives up a lot of contact. Yeah, I've seen a lot, and that's what I've seen it a lot early in games, and that's why I asked him about the fact that he has given up some runs early in games. And so, but the thing, I guess, during this chat that stood out for me that I wanted to get to was when I asked him about the fact that he gave up runs early in games, and you did hear him chuckle in the background, and, you know, he did come up with some reasons, but I think the biggest thing that he said was something that's probably prevalent throughout the rotation or throughout the entire pitching staff, and that's, hey, look, if I give up a solo or a two-run homer, you know, essentially, it's no big deal. And there aren't a lot of pitchers out there in MPB who are saying that. And that's a credit to the Lions, obviously, the offense that these guys can generate. And if you can pitch that way, that you're not afraid, yep. I think it's just a huge boost and a huge advantage. Like, they're going to go into this second round of the PLCS, and they're going to be saying, well, I mean, we don't have to worry if we give up a couple home runs early, you know. Mm-hmm. But nobody else, I don't think there's another team out there that's not afraid to perhaps fall behind by three or four runs, and or have guys do damage to them earlier in games, and then think that they're, you know, they've blown the whole game up. And as we saw, we'll get to it later on Saturday, you can think you've blown a whole game up and you can come back and win it, as Hanjin did. So I just found that, you know, kind of profound, because I think, especially in a playoff situation, I mean, you're a playoff situation, you're not going in thinking, well, you know, if I give up a solo or a two-run shot, I'm still going to be okay. I think the name of the game, especially in the playoffs, when the run scoring seems to go down, is that you don't want to give up that first run. That's what we hear about the Japanese pitchers saying. They don't want to give up the first run, and they want to keep the ball in the park. Those are the two things they talk about. And then number three, you know, no frivolous walks. You know, walk, pitch around the guys you want to pitch around, but no frivolous walks. So,
That walk. Yeah, I can imagine somebody, the pitching coach, that walk was a little too frivolous. Stop being frivolous.
Well, I mean, don't pass out walks to chumps, you know? Pass out the walks to the guys we want to give them to. So, yeah.
Yeah.
That walk was a little bit too frivolous. You smarty pants.
Well, no, but I want to elaborate on something you said I thought was very astute, and that is the idea of fear. And because Japanese society, there's a large quotient of fearing to make a mistake, fearing to be the one who makes the mistake that is costly. It's a huge thing in Japanese society. Don't be the person who messes up.
Right.
It's very often managers and players will say Japanese baseball is less about winning than it is about not being the one to lose the game.
Right.
Okay. Now, but baseball, having said that, baseball is really fun because it has that social construct of we should be paralyzed in fear to not make mistakes. We should act with machine-like precision, but at the same time, be without fear so that we can function offensively. And we can function effectively, as he, you know, he said the thing about the Lions pitching, and the thing that you alluded to is the same, that it's easy to pitch for the Lions because that fear factor is reduced.
Right.
And I think there are some managers, and I think Alex, this is a huge. Something that Alex Ramirez of the DNA BayStars is particularly good at is sort of reducing that fear factor, you know, basically saying, you know, go out and do your job and let everything else take care of it. I'm not worried if you're, you're attacking the strike zone and you get hit. I'm worried when you're worried about making mistakes and you give away the game because you're paranoid about, you make big, you know, you put yourself, your back to the wall because you're afraid of making little mistakes.
Or just like we talked about, you exacerbate, you give up a hit, that's fine, but then you exacerbate the situation by walking the bases loaded. You know, you put the next two
right.
guys
on. Or as he said,
now you're in trouble.
You know, it's only a single, but after the single's a walk and then all of a sudden you're in a heap of trouble.
Right, right. All right, let's talk about the Lions very briefly since they're going to start their series against an unknown opponent. Unknown.
A team to be named later.
A team to be named later. Later, but probably only hours after we released this podcast. But anyway, so we know Zach Neale is going to get game one. I've heard that. I've seen the reports on that. But I'm just trying to figure out who's going to get game two and whether it really matters or not, because I mentioned it earlier on in the season that a lot of their pitchers are so similar. So it could be Tatsuya Imai. It could be Wataru Matsumoto. It could be Kona Takahashi. Now, they all throw differently, but they're all mm-hmm. right-handed starters who aren't probably going to go more than six innings, maybe. It could be Keisuke Honda. I mean, it could be, he could get a start. Ken Togami could start. It could be a bunch of guys, but to me, maybe they'll save the rookie Matsumoto for later, but I don't think any of those guys is going to go longer than, you know, five or six innings unless they're really, really dealing or, you know, you got a perfect game, no-hitter situation going. So, and then after that, we're going to see Katsunori Hirai, who has gotten some rest, so that means he's going to pitch in every game.
I think he might pitch in more than every game. He might come in and pitch twice in the same game. I think that's what they're working on.
They're checking into the rules and the Climax Series roster rules and all those.
I think they're going for like a suspended game or something. Maybe they can trade him to another team and have him come back and pitch twice.
So anyway, as Jim beats this dead horse, I think Tsuji's going to use, he's going to be very liberal with his bullpen. I think we're going to just see a lot of mixing and matching probably from that side. So to get those last, once the out count gets into the 20s, you know, we could see a lot of pitchers come out there. So it should be a fun series from that side. And I'm just expecting the Lions to do what Tsuji said when he was gave that tearful farewell last year after the Climax Series loss, and just what Ernesto Mejia said recently on the show, which was, you know, we know how to handle these situations in the playoffs now. We've been there, we've been through it, and we're going to come through on top. So that's what I'm expecting.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be fun. I mean, if the first stage is fun, the second stage will be fun also.
Well, let's talk about this first stage now. Mm-hmm. Make a seamless transition. And round one in the PLCS, the Eagles won on Saturday. They won 5-3, and it was a home run fest as we started to try to count. And, you know, this, I tweeted it out. Hideto Asamura, the offseason free agent pickup the Eagles brought in, was basically or essentially brought in to do just what he was doing, which was be a really big run producer in the middle of that lineup. And he did. He was, by hitting a couple home runs. Louis Okoye had a home run. Egoro Mogi had a blast. I think his was the tiebreaker. So and they added a run late. So it was a great day. I couldn't find this. I was looking. I have to believe that was a career worst for Kodai Senga of the Hawks in terms of the four home runs that he allowed in one game. But I couldn't find any reports that said that, actually. So I'm wondering if he had a bad game in there somewhere in his career.
Oh, I think he had a bad game this year.
Yeah, but I don't know if it was four home run bad. But, so he had given up three home runs by the fifth inning. So that just, it was not good for him. But on the flip side, Takahiro Norimoto, he didn't look happy to relinquish mm-hmm. the ball and leave the game in the hands of the bullpen. But he did. You know, Yosuke Hiraishi, the manager, talked him off the ledge, so to speak. And it didn't seem to go that poorly. It didn't go well, but it didn't go that poorly. And the bullpen was awesome It was a great start for them in the series, and it was a really fun game to watch because every time you kind of looked up, I mean, I had it on, I could hear some of the volume, so, but it just seemed like every time I looked up, one of those teams was hitting a home run. There were six home runs in the game. As previously stated, the Eagles hit four of them. So it was just fun. But, and I really, really was happy for Okoye because, remember, we were talking about where are they going to trade this guy? What are they going to do with him? And now he's on the postseason roster. Not only that, he was starting in their first playoff game. Not only that, he crushes a home run. It was just, I was real happy for him personally.
Yeah, it was a good game. I think both teams, I mean, the start was pretty awkward. It was sort of like, I don't know what you say. I mean,
it was like two teams in a high school dance. You know, they didn't know how to dance, but they knew is they liked each other. They knew how to play baseball, but they certainly didn't know how to go about it.
Well, I was thinking, Kodai Senga went through an inning and two pitches looking really good, and then with the third pitch in the second inning, it was like, okay, what happened to the script? It was a bad pitch. I'm looking at, oh man, I'm going, man, he's really keeping these guys off the barrel of the bat. Boy, they're swinging at that. It was a good crisp fastball and he was throwing a splitter in there. And then I'm sure he didn't say, I'm going to hang this one, hang this one just a little higher than belt high and just let it float up there. Yeah. But that's what happened. And there was a bunch of those pitches. And then Norimoto's like going, hey, I can do that too. and it was hanging splitter, hanging slider, hanging splitter. And I'm going like, and the funniest thing was the one, the go-ahead home run by Igor Imogi was a home run. It was one of those ones you just kind of like going, it was like a ball that just was probably a little livelier than the rest of its brothers.
Right.
it looked actually like he popped it up. You know, it had that kind of funny pop-ups coming off the bat. I'm going, but the center fielder is going back on that thing.
Yeah, I tell you what, because I see those kinds of, and I watched a lot of major league games as well this year, and the ball is kind of got that funky, you know, I want to fly kind of an attitude over there as well. I want to be like Mike. I believe I can fly. When he hit that, I kind of made that scrunchy face that I made because I thought it has a chance, but I don't think he got it all.
Yeah, it looked like he hit it.
I didn't think he popped it up. I figured he had a chance. It had a chance to go out, but I wasn't sure he got it all. But you know, most of those home runs that day were in the terrace, the home run terrace.
Yeah, exactly. Well, they weren't particularly great swings. They were just really easy pitches to hit.
Well, the Seiichi Uchikawa home run was just a line drive, and it just happened to be high enough to clear the fence. But normally, it's a double in every park, you know, in Japan, even Jingu probably because
all those. I mean, some was first and.
Yeah, I joke. I'm pretty sure that was a home run at Jingu because that fence is a joke. But yeah, most of the other parks, it's probably not a home run because it's just, you know, it's just not that high. But
they're working on it. I mean, Chiba's got those.
Oh, that's right.
Chiba knocked them. Yeah, they're going low. They're saying we're in with the cheap home runs.
We can do that. So yeah. So it's going to be fun to watch the game on Monday night. Or both games. You gotta have two sets of eyes to watch the two games that are going on at once. Mm-hmm. And then I got the Twins running around the house. So it'll be a real fun time on Monday night trying to watch these two games. I wish one series would have ended. Just one. But anyway, so we came out on Sunday and the Eagles took a first run lead, one run lead in the first inning. But they end up losing 6-4, so SoftBank stays alive. Again, Hideto Asamura, he picks up where he left off of game one. He has a solo blast in the third, his third home run of the series. He had a two-run single in the fourth inning. He had six RBIs and 13 innings at that point. But you had Shuhei Fukuda cracking a solo home run in the fourth inning, and Alfredo Despaigne with an insurance homer in the fifth. And the bullpen of the Hawks actually came out and looked like the bullpen of the Hawks that we are used to seeing, and they nailed it down. And
Well, after the first guy, I mean, they brought in, first of all, they took Rick Vandenhurk out in the fourth inning and replaced him with Shinya Kayama, which didn't really work out well. And because Kayama walked the first two guys to load the bases and then gives up. I mean, it wasn't, you know, Asamura is just a good hitter, and he got an easy pitch to hit, and he didn't put a good swing on it, but he had enough of on it to get it over the infield, two-run single, bingo.
I didn't think it was an easy pitch to hit, but it was, because I thought it was good hitting on his.
I thought it was too.
And I heard the announcer say, well, I was listening on, I had that one on the radio, and I had the Hanshin game on TV, and so the radio announcer. The color analyst said, well, you know, if he doesn't hit that, it's gonna bounce. And I'm like, no, it wasn't that low. You're exaggerating. But it was low. It was out of the zone. It was definitely not an easy ball to hit. But it was somewhere in between there. It was hittable, and he poked it.
He was pitching true enough. He was pitching carefully to him, and he did poke it over, you know, opposite field over the second baseman's head, a little looper, and that was enough. And then afterwards, I love the hero interviews, and I have to think that the guy who does the Hawks hero interviews is probably the best.
Oh, really?
In Japan. Yeah, because
the guy asking the questions.
Yes.
Because, if indeed they are questions, because sometimes they are not.
No, they're not. Sometimes, but with the Hawks, they're more often stimulus for humor. You know, they're almost like jokes, and the players say they just say the most interesting things sometimes in the Hawks hero interviews, and it's not always this is the greatest and
this is the awesomest.
Exactly, the awesomest, and it's just so cool. So the two funny things that were today's, and I love the Hawks. I do love a lot of them. A lot of them are hilarious. I mean, this year I learned from Tsuyoshi Wada and Seiichi Uchikawa that they believe there is a god living in the Hawks players, the home dugout restroom.
Good luck with that.
Indeed. So anyway, today's the interesting was the two interviews were Shuta Ishikawa, the pitcher who hasn't been pitching a lot this year. And he came in after Kayama when the Hawks took the lead on the Fukuda home run, and he struck out three of the seven guys he faced. And he said, I wasn't really good. I was really nervous coming in. And he said, but then you struck out Asamura, and you're like, nobody's been able to get that guy out. And then he looked at him, and he says, okay, that part was really good. And then the next one is Fukuda, who's, as you all know, is a favorite of John's. And he said, of course, the funny thing is, one of the things about Japanese hero interviews is that all the guys who aren't like 30 home run guys basically have to come out, they have to read a disclaimer when they're on the hero interview, which is, I wasn't trying to hit a home run because I'm not a home run hitter. I was just trying to, you know, build the inning, you know, move the runners along.
Right.
And by accident, exactly. And I made a mistake somehow, and I tried to hit the ball harder than you kids should not try this at home, because I made a mistake, and I tried to hit the ball too hard, and it went out. But don't do that.
Right.
You know, they always give home runs are bad. You know, you shouldn't try to hit home runs.
He had to go back to the dugout and say, Coach, you know, it was a little bit higher than, you know, belt high, and I'm sorry, I kind of uppercutted the swing. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, exactly. Laps for you after the game. I'm not kidding, but that's the hero interview, and they always say it. I mean, it's like 9 times out of 10, I wasn't trying to hit home run. I was only trying to advance the runner. I was trying, you know, whatever. But Fukuda's one says, I was the leadoff hitter and I was just trying to get on base, and I believe that. He got a fat pitch and he cranked it. I mean, it wasn't a home run swing, but he just really drove it.
Yeah.
I think his eyes lit up.
It was a good looking win. Yeah.
It was a beauty, and it made me think, wow, you know, if he could do that all the time. He said, wasn't trying to hit a home run, but that was probably the best swing I've had as a professional hitter.
Wow.
And the announcer said, well, how was interviewer said, how was the feeling? You know, you got the crowds just going nuts as you circling the bases. And this was the line that was so funny. He said, well, I was in the dugout. And he said, oh, wait a second, I was circling the bases. He says, I'm a substitute, so I spend most of my life in the dugout, so I can't imagine. But yes, I was on the bases.
Wait a second, I was having an out of dugout experience.
So that was just the I don't know what, sweet or cute or whatever. It was very fun.
Charming.
I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, that was fun stuff. That's really good. So, this, like we said, this series will finish up today as we release the podcast today on Monday. Mm-hmm. And I have to be honest, I would love to see Asamura go back to Cebu and torment the team because of the way, you know, he's really has had a really good season against them this year. But I've just seen a lot of fan, a little bit among the Japanese fans too, but just fan hate just because he left to get paid. And I never understand that because all the people...
Unusual in Japan, actually.
Yeah, but because, I mean, still, usual or unusual, somebody offered you more money to go somewhere, everyone and their family would go and take the money. So why would you criticize a guy who is getting paid more to do the same thing? Anyway, it doesn't make sense at all to me. So
they should be saying, hey... We would love you fans so much that we even play for these cheapskates.
Hashtag high heat.
Okay. I have to think. I don't know what the thought process was behind Asamura leaving, but yeah. But again, I don't understand because typically, actually, that's almost an American thing. The players' attitudes about free agency have changed so much in the last 22 years of, or the last 25 years of free agency. First, nobody wanted to be a free agent because they thought like their teammates would dump on them.
Right.
And then the fans would, you know, what about the fans? And then they realized that people get over it. And in Japan, the free agents leave and they come back and their old fans cheer for them, which I like that. You know, I think this is part of Japanese baseball. I don't think it's a, you know, you left and we're happy for you, but we were your fan before and we still like you.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll analyze, free agency in the off season here. Let's get back to the Central League now. So we'll make a four-seam transition and talk about the CLCS. And so game one, a game that generated a lot of talk on Twitter and other places, social media, all over the place, and ends up being an 8-7 victory for the Tigers. They come back from a 7-1 hole. And, I thought, and I tweeted about this too, Alex Ramirez, the manager for the Bay Stars, who's normally really aggressive when it gets to the playoffs, was strangely conservative this day. And it seemed to me, now maybe this was different, and I heard him talking about and defending his plan and postseason if they lose on Monday.
It's
post-game presser, and he said, and I just thought he had a clear and present plan with his pitching staff that he didn't want to deviate too much from. And I'm guessing, you know, he said it after the game, said, I don't have any regrets. That's baseball. That's the way it goes. It happens that way. But I thought it was a little bit conservative and less aggressive than I've seen him in the past. And you know, who knows? I think in these situations, you know, it's hard to decide if the manager helped you lose the game or if it was all the players.
Oh yeah, that's beyond knowable, I think.
Yeah, and so I mean everybody contributed, and in fact there were mistakes. You know, the last one being Kazuki Kamisato, who took a step in on a line drive with two runners on, and it, And we'll talk about this again at some point, but I always say the infielders don't get a chance to take a wrong step, because if they do and they misplay a ball, it's an error. But when an outfielder takes a wrong step and butchers a ball, it stays a hit for some reason when it was clearly misplayed and should be an error. But anyway, he came in on a ball in the eighth inning, and you know, Edwin Escobar didn't really have his great stuff. I think I would have gone with somebody else a lot quicker, and I don't think I would have sent Yuki Kuniyoshi of all people out there. And I was thinking about Spencer Patton, but we did get to see him pitch in game two, so I could see why he didn't go that route as well. It was just they were caught between a rock and a hard ball. And listen, he made a lot of questionable, there were a lot of questionable things that happened. And even early on in the game, in the first inning, I said it, they got to Yuki Nishi. They got three runs off him early with the home run from Yoshitomo Tsutsugo, three-run shot. And they had hit, they hit him and knocked him out of the game. And that was the worst thing for them because they had five hits off of him in 12 pitches. And they didn't bunt and try to add maybe just one more run onto that. They just decided to hit away. I mean, I know Alex doesn't bunt that much, and it kind of didn't make sense. You try to capitalize and put your foot on the throat. So I understand, but they ended up not scoring any more runs. In fact, Yuki Moriya, who came in to relieve Yuki Nishi, he did an excellent job to get them out of that inning without any further damage. And it was just a great game. But anyway, I'm thinking, by the time Kamisato blew that line drive that came at him, and we all know those are hard, center fielder, blah, 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 it's the hardest play for those guys to make. But when he made that mistake, it was akin to maybe decapitating a torso that had no appendages on it, in my opinion, because they had already made so many mistakes up to that point. That was just one more mistake in a whole sea of mistakes that ended up costing them this game. And then the other thing is, you got to give credit to Hanshin. They delivered. I mean, yep. You get a lot of people get these opportunities and you don't get that hit. And that goes back to what I've said before in the past on the podcast. Listen, you can have all kinds of opportunities. Somebody has to get that hit for your team to get the advantage, or else you end up losing. So they're important. They're more important, but they are very important to get. And I don't mind when the media says, well, this guy knocked in the game-winning run, especially in a situation like that, because if he didn't do it, they wouldn't have won. But it takes everything up to that point and everything after that point to actually win the game. So it's all important, but I don't mind them making a big deal out of a guy who gets that done. So great game.
Well, I do sometimes. But I only mind it when somebody does something that's accidental. They get a bad swing on a fat pitch and basically make a ball that should be caught for an out, but it falls in for the winning RBI, and all of a sudden the guy's a hero and thinking I shouldn't have, or swings, tries to make an out on ball four with the bases loaded and drives in the winning run by accident. Then but that happens in Japan, because it only matters, the results are the only thing that matters, not the as much as they like to say about the process, they can't shut up about the results.
I'm just
sort of like,
that's another rock in a hardball place too, because you do want the results, but we're, as a player, and that's what I always complain. I say, look, the only people who really care about the results are the people who are betting, so anybody involved with Vegas and those guys, and the fans and the media. The other people, the coaches, the players themselves, they're worried about the process, because that's what's going to help them have
until the
more
end.
Success.
And at the end, only at the end, when it's all done, then only the results matter. But anyway, you don't get to the end without the process. Okay. I just wanted to say a couple of things there, is that, a lot of mistakes. And what struck me was, well, first of all, I have my pet peeve, and I know I should get a new peeve, because I've kept this peeve for a long time and it's growing whiskers old enough to vote, which is bringing the outfield in.
Yeah.
With two outs and the, with with two outs, they bring the center field, all the outfielders playing very shallow. If Kamizato is playing in normal position, then he was probably thinking, I'm playing normal depth. Wait, I'm not. I don't get to take a step in on that ball because I should have been taking five steps in and catching it. Mm-hmm. And, he misjudged it, but he was also playing, 75 feet behind second base. Yeah, yeah. And I'm not kidding. I mean, I see this so often, and Matt Winters, the former Nippon Ham Fighters slugger, has said, oh, yeah, I lost so many RBIs because the guys caught those balls that would have been singles. And I do generally like outfielders to play shallow because so many balls are singles in front of them. But every time there's two outs and the final out could be caught, and it goes for extra bases because the outfield was too shallow, my inner Wayne Grassick comes out.
Yeah, I mean,
playing too shallow. Anybody could have hit that.
Yeah, you can't let the ball get over your head in that situation, and it really, really cost them. And yeah, not with two outs, I wouldn't be doing that. The only time I would do that is in the ninth inning when the game's on the line.
Mm. So there was that. Yeah. And there was, Edwin Escobar said it was his worst game he's ever pitched, and although I doubt that's true, it was probably the worst big game he'd ever pitched. He missed the ball that was hit into the stratosphere by Fumio Hojo against him. That was really a bad pitch. But you know what? It's baseball. They have to come out and do this. My thinking about the late inning bullpen was, Alex, I did look back and I saw that Alex Ramirez this year had never used Yasuaki Yamasaki, his closer, before the ninth inning.
Right.
He pitched more than one inning once, and that was when he came in the ninth inning of a tie game. So he pitched the ninth and the tenth. That was the one time he pitched more than one inning. So that's his policy. Exactly. You're the ninth inning guy. So until the ninth inning, now what happened is this is a very unusually orthodox position for a manager in Japan to take. And Alex is typically not a very orthodox manager. So I find it quite, as you said, quite interesting. Now, having said that, I was thinking at the time, well, let's see, you got all these guys on base and you've got a lead. So let's get one guy who's going to give you the best chance to get an out and keep him around for the ninth inning. But I guess that was not part of the plan on Saturday. So now the Bay Stars have lost game one. Their backs are to the wall and they've got a lead in the eighth inning. And guess who comes out to start the eighth inning? But the guy who couldn't use for one out in the eighth the day before comes out to start the eighth inning.
Well, it's all contextual, man. You know, he gets clean innings, so they weren't going to bring him into I don't know. You have to ask. You're going to have to ask Alex. So you go to Tokyo Dome on Wednesday and you ask him about that.
I'll ask him tomorrow, actually. I'll ask him Monday.
Okay.
So we'll see.
All right, so game two on Sunday.
I can already hear his answer.
Well, then you don't have to ask him. You have to ask him anyway. All right, so game two on Sunday. It's actually the same score. We had both games on Sunday were the same score, 6-4, and the Bay Stars get a walk-off home run from Tomo Otosaka. And they win that one. So I wanted to give big credit to Fumio Hojo for his 5 RBI home run and triple game. Although I still would have marked that an error. It's an error in my book, buddy. But they give you a triple. Anyway, so good job by him. So game two, like we said, Tomo Otosaka hits a ninth inning walk-off 2-run shot after faking a bunt. You had DeNA taking the lead early. They had a 3-run lead, and it's like, oh, they're going to do it again. They're going to blow the lead because they blew the lead yesterday, so they're going to have to blow a lead today. And little by little, the Tigers worked their way back in. But what I thought, what I was watching this game is, when I did the prediction and By the way, yes, I did get 1 through 4 of the my Central League predictions correct because the Tigers finished with a 6-game winning streak to end the season and knock the Carp into fourth place. What a miracle. Anyway, when I'm watching this game, I had to refrain. You told me to refrain from exchanging communications with Michael Westbay because it could be bad for my health. There's something, some snide remark you made last time. So I'm not going to bother Michael. I'm not going to talk to him about this game, but I could just feel the nervousness among the fans there at the stadium and Bay Stars fans everywhere. It just seemed like they were just worried that this lead was going to whittle away, and it did. And again, you had Ramirez using, this time with Shota Imanaga, his ace in relief, and he couldn't get it done. And the thing I wanted to say about the Tigers is I'm just really impressed, because when I did the preview and I said, look, this is a team that can really pitch, but the offense is going to struggle. But those guys really have put together this stretch at the end of the season included, and then here in the playoffs so far in 2 games, they've really matured in the batter's box with some of the younger players and some of the whatever. I think it's part of the whole manager player dynamic, and they know what's expected of them, and they know what the manager's going to do, and they know the kind of approach he wants them to take, and they've all seemed to be, everything seems to be meshing at the right time for them in terms of the offense. And they had a bad start, and they gave up those 7 runs in the first game, but the bullpen pitched really well. They only gave up a few hits, I think, after that, and they really weren't in that much trouble, and they won that game, and yesterday they were really close. I mean, you know, with Otosaka, I think what I saw yesterday, Ramirez had a hunch, and he used him, but I think the hunch came from manager from Rami Khan thinking, well, you know, this kid spent some time in winter ball in Mexico, so I bet he saw his share of left-handers throwing fastballs to him. And we all know that what's Suguru Iwasaki, I think he's a fastball slider guy. I think he was expecting a fastball. He got one. He got a good one to hit, and he drove it out. And I mean, it was a hunch, but I think it was a calculated hunch, and it really worked out for the Bay Stars. And I think the game tonight, on Monday, I keep saying tonight, I don't know when you guys are going to listen, but it's Monday night, is going to be really one for the ages, hopefully.
Well, I hope it doesn't add too many ages to my age. I've got enough already to start with.
Well, just finish the game in 12 innings like you're required to do, and then let's go home. But they have to. So even a tie, yeah. I think a tie and Yokohama will advance. So
that's right. Right. Yokohama can now advance with a tie or a win or 2 rainouts.
2 rainouts. Well, yeah. No rain in the forecast tomorrow. I had already checked.
Yeah, we had this scenario in 2017 when the Bay Stars had to beat the Hanshin Tigers in Koshien, and they played in the rain and the mud.
Yes.
And they almost didn't finish the series, and the Tigers almost advanced because they didn't finish the series.
Yeah. All right, so let's make a 2-seam transition and talk about the, I've labeled this one skipping out and skipping in. So
skip to my Lou.
Skip to my Lou. On Tuesday, Koichi Ogata of the Hiroshima Carp made somewhat of a shocking announcement.
Yeah.
He just kind of stepped down out of blue or out of the red. Or the Carp red. Now, for me, you know, I thought it was either something that was coming straight from the heart because he was just plain stressed out.
That's what I thought, because if you're smacking your players around, that's probably a sign that you're too stressed out.
Oh, all right. I'll keep that in mind. but yeah,
you remind your kids.
No, I haven't hit him yet. I haven't hit him yet.
I know you have. I know you haven't.
I said yet.
Yeah, well, you don't want to give away all your hints.
Right. So he was a manager there for 5 years. He guided the team to its first pennant in 25 years, and that was in 2016. Then their first repeat in the Central League in 37 years, that was the following year, and the first three-peat in club history, that was last year. And the Carp were 70 and 70 this year, so they only had one losing season under him. And so he gets up at the press conference and he says, I want to take responsibility for the poor results. But the Japanese phrase he used, and of course, you know, this poor results and that's why I'm quitting, that's boilerplate stuff that guys always say.
Yeah, it goes really, with the home run hitters, not
right.
Not
when you look into it, he's pretty much 100, almost 100 games over 500 in his career with the Carp. And like I said,
they
finished at 500 this year, so they weren't really poor results. They just didn't make the climax series. And except for the bumbling of an interleague lineup card mess up that he did in his rookie season, he's really been one of the better managers in having his team ready to play and having his team ready to compete and bringing players along. So I don't know what he's talking about with that stuff. That was nutty. But the Japanese phrase that he gave when he said he was going to take the uniform off, he didn't say he was going to take the uniform off. He said it's been decided. Basically, if you were to directly translate, it's been decided that I'll be taking the uniform off. So I don't even know what this whole thing was. And I didn't talk to I could have called the Carp reporter, but I just didn't have time. So I think I want to dig into this a little bit deeper when I have the opportunity or chance, or if there is such a thing, or just maybe even do some more research when things slow down, maybe after the draft and all that stuff. But anyway, Shinji Sasaoka, one of their great pitchers, former great pitchers, he'll be probably taking over. Was he already named?
Not that I know of. Okay, they basically said he's going to be the next manager.
Right. And so he has been the pitching coach. So I really liked Ogata as a player. I think I talked about that. It just injuries slowed him down as a player. And I came to like him as a manager, too. I mean, he was kind of predictable in a lot of phases, but in other ways he wasn't. And he was fiery. I liked the passion. And I think his team reflected that on the field, and I like what he did. So I hope he comes back at some point and manages the team again.
And look at it this way. I mean, any of the Carp players who are trying to quit cigarettes, they won't have to get nicotine patches because all the secondhand smoke from Shinji Sasaoka will be just kind of everything will be sort of tobacco flavored from now on. So there's always that.
Guys got that to look forward to. So, and then skipping into Swallows land is Shingo Takatsu. He was introduced as their new manager this past week, and he said he wants to build a team that fans can enjoy watching, and he wants to work with the pitching staff and help remake that. And it was so funny, during his presser they asked him, who's the key player? You know, they like to use the term key man. Who's the key player? The media asked it as if it were the key player, but the phrase is key man. And so he didn't want to answer that question. And he was really quick on his feet and he says, I'm the key man.
I love it.
Because I have to come in here and turn this thing around. I'm the one. But then he started to, you know, back off of that a little bit. And he said, well, you know, we need players to produce, and ultimately they're going to be the ones on the field getting the job done. But yeah, it's my job to have them ready to play. And he's got a task in front of him that, you know, I can see is a rebuild in terms of the pitching staff, because we can point to that. I think that's really easy and see that they had very poor pitching results. But I think they don't have poor pitchers per se. They just got bad results. And maybe that's a philosophical thing that he can change. And they've got some talent. I mean, I don't know what we're going to do in choosing Munenaka Murakami or Koji Chikamoto for Rookie of the Year. I don't know how we do that. I don't know how we choose MVP in the Pacific League. There are a lot of tough choices for the media to come up with. But he's got some talent on that team, especially offensively, and I think he can shape the team. So he said he wants to make it a fun team, so
it should be that. Well, he was a fun player. My favorite Takatsu moment was when Tetsuya Iida, the Swallows' leadoff hitter and center fielder 25 years ago, was hurt. And they need, you know, they were trying to cover up for him. And a lot of the players put Iida's number, put Iida's number on their hats and things, because it was, he was sort of like a big, he was a big team spark. He was their spark plug. And Takatsu put a dot on his hat, a black dot. And what's, and that wasn't for Iida's number. That was for the mole that that is noticeable on his face.
Nice. Nice. All right. Well, the black dot skipper, we'll call him.
Indeed. Yeah. So he got good marks from the foreign pitchers who, when he was the Swallows pitching coach. And he's also coming as the farmer, as the next Swallows farm team manager to take over, the third straight after Junji Ogawa and Mitsuru Monaka, and they all had some success, so good luck to him.
Yeah, good luck. I mean, of course, they've got some players to work with, I think, in terms of the offense, and like I said, maybe it could be a philosophical thing they change with the pitchers, and then all of a sudden you see better results with them. So then we had Hideki Kuriyama of the Nippon Ham Fighters, who started to skip away but decided to go back to his seat and behave, and so he's gonna stay.
He was trying to cut class, but they wouldn't let him.
He's gonna skip out. Yeah. So he decides to stay with the team. So we all thought he was leaving, and those were the reports. But he's not going anywhere, and that's good for the fighters, I think. And that's what I had said, and I think we were both right. You were right in the fact that you said, well, he might ask if he could leave, or they'll ask him to stay, and he might say no a few times. And I said, well, I can't see them moving forward, especially when they're heading toward a new stadium and all those stuff in the next few years, without him, because he really has become the face of that franchise. So.
So essentially, just to clarify, he didn't say he was quitting. Okay. He told a team person, said he met with the team president and said he wanted to quit.
Okay.
And the team said, we don't want you to quit. We don't think it's your fault. And he met with a team owner, and the team owner, I would imagine, reiterated that point. We don't think this is your fault. This is a team organizational issue. And he decided to stick around. So good. And I'm glad, as I wrote, I'm glad because he's one of the few, he and Alex Ramirez are probably the two most unpredictable managers in terms of the things they're willing to do in managing a team that other managers really wouldn't consider. So I'm glad those two guys are both going to be managing next year, because Japanese baseball will be more interesting with them.
Okay.
At least for the time being, Alex Ramirez will be there. We haven't heard anything about his future yet.
Yeah, maybe win that game on Monday. All right, and one note, we did learn tonight just before we started taping, that former pitcher, Swallows pitcher and Giants pitcher, at least, Masaichi Kaneda passed away at 88 on Sunday. I think he's best known for being a 400-game winner with 4,490 strikeouts was the number, I think.
Something. He leads. He holds a career record for wins, losses, complete games, innings pitched, walks, and strikeouts.
Good grief.
I know. Like, do something with your career, huh? And the interesting thing is he pitched 15 years for the original Swallows, owned by the Japanese National Railroad, the Kokutetsu Swallows.
Right.
And he pitched 5 years for the Yomiuri Giants, and for which he actually had a huge influence on the Giants. Bob Whiting, the author Bob Whiting, has repeatedly told me. And he had a huge influence, but he didn't win a lot of games with the Giants. Basically, he hung around for 5 years to get 400. But he was pretty much through as a pitcher. But he apparently had a huge influence on that team, because his first 5 years, not because of him, but his first 5 years with you, his 5 years with Yomiuri coincided with the first 5 years of their 9-year Japan Series winning streak, the V9 years. And He is his number 34 has been retired by the Giants, but not by the Swallows. So that's kind of interesting.
Right, right. And he, over 14 consecutive seasons, won at least 20 games, if you can imagine that.
Okay, and the first year he did that, he was 17 years old.
Yeah, good grief.
He turned pro when he was 16, so. Yeah,
best wishes to his family.
Yeah, he was also, last thing is, he was one of the original, I think it was the original chairman of the Meikyu Kai, the society, the charitable society that promotes baseball. And
Golden Players Club.
The Golden Players Club for players who are born in the Showa era with 200 wins or 250 saves or 2,000 hits. Yep, okay.
Okay, let's go to fielding questions. All right, we got an MP3 from our buddy Mike in D.C.
Hey, John and Jim. As the MLB playoffs approach, us American fans will once again be deprived of seeing Mike Trout play in October, despite the fact that he created over 8 wins above replacement this year. So that got me thinking, and I went down a bit of a statistical rabbit hole. It looks like the Angels created about 27 wins above replacement across their roster for just 71 wins. That equals about 2.6 wins above replacement per win. Meanwhile, the division-leading Astros created 66 wins above replacement for 104 wins, which is just 1.5 WAR per win. Meanwhile, the A's, between those two teams, created about 50 wins above replacement for 95 wins, meaning about 1.9 wins above replacement per win. So, I had a few questions. Is there a standard wins above replacement for to actual record ratio? And for that matter, what team in MPB has done the best job of converting effectively good players or high WAR into wins? Thanks.
All right. Thanks a lot, Mike. Really appreciate the question. Jim.
Okay, I'm not really a war person.
Me,
but
it's all peace with me, babe.
That's right. We're both Pacific Leaguers in that respect. And so basically the difficulty is that WAR doesn't really relate to actual team wins. And so you see that huge disparity. So I don't think it has a lot to do with the team being efficient. Basically, they measure each player as an individual where they fit on a scale. And depending on where, you get WAR based on what you've done, pluses and minuses on the scale that are irrelevant to team wins. So you're going to have times when, the team has very few wins relative to the number of WAR they have, or very often, teams will have vastly more wins above replacement than they actually have wins. So, which is kind of difficult to imagine how they did that, but that happens. I don't want to trash WAR because I don't know it well enough to trash it.
Okay.
We haven't been married long enough.
For me, I mean, I love all the new numbers and the new methods of measuring contributions and production and all that stuff. And I think the numbers help define the production and what a player means, but I can't say that I take WAR and say, okay, well, that's what I'm going to use to rank my players and choose my MVP. And I think that's lazy. I think it's wrong. I think all the players are in different situations. I remember talking on the podcast, and since Mike, you remember the great MVP discussion of 2011.
Discussion is kind of a muted
spat.
Everybody,
I think a lot of people, I wouldn't say everybody, but a lot of people just have a different definition of what all these things mean. And so to try to put a number or a numeric value or assign these numbers to what the player's contributions are. I mean, one player could be on one team and have the exact same number of hits and basic production as another player on another team in the same, let's say they batted in the number 3 hole the entire season, and one guy has a bazillion RBIs and, they both hit 30 home runs, but the other guy has, 50 more RBIs because he's got better teammates. And so how do you value that guy's production and compare it with the other guy? The other guy did the exact same thing, but is he any less of a player because he didn't get RBIs?
Yeah, these are big questions, and I think the answer is that you have to sort of look. You know, we were talking about Zach Neale, and I was thinking, before the podcast, we were talking about Zach Neale, and you know, and I see Delta Graphs is the analytics site, and I'm not a fan of WAR, but it's handy to have around because if you know, you may not agree how accurate it is, but sometimes. Okay, if this guy's at one end of the scale and the other guy's at the other end of the scale, even though I'm not a fan of WAR, I can see that somebody's made a serious, dedicated effort to distinguish these two points. It's not the only thing. There are so many things you want to look at, and what I find is that the different analytics are like. Shading in a painting or a drawing in that every additional line fills out the picture more so that you can see more of the picture and understand more of the picture better. I don't think any one line or set of lines or set of shades is going to reveal the entire meaning.
Yeah.
Ever.
I'm with you. So I'm sorry, Mark. I don't think either one of us is really going to answer the question, but that's why I like to watch the games. And I watch all the games, as much as I can of all the games, every night to see who's doing what, to see what kind of at-bats they get. I'm not just watching for results. I'm trying to see how the other teams are either pitching around or not pitching to or pitching to a particular player and how he gets his hits and how he contributes to the team. And I think it's impossible to do for everybody, especially if you're looking at major leagues. It's impossible to watch every game, although I probably would try, but I don't think
it's possible. Yeah, that's John's waiting for that device that he can implant in his skull that will just like get all the video feeds and comprehension of all the video feeds
directly to my brain. Yeah,
15 games, exactly. 15 games in MLB and 6 in Japan all at one time.
Well, all in my 90-minute workout program. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Pretty much.
Yeah. So, Mike, if you can invent that for me, I'll tell you what all these WAR things mean. All right.
Yeah.
All right. This has been a really long one. We'll check out here and talk to you next week when we find out. Well, we'll be in the middle of the second round of the Climax series, and we might even be done with one of them. Who knows? But we will talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
See you at the postseason ballparks.